This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago in Phoenix, Arizona.
It's way too hot. This is ridiculous.
A big city record has been broken there with 19 consecutive days at or above 110 degrees. The heat is straining some power grids. CBS's Michael George reports.
Residents in California are being urged to take it easy on the air conditioning to avoid a potential blackout. Death Valley is registering temperatures above 110 degrees at night.
When you've got really hot temperatures that don't cool down at night, that can be really taxing on the electrical equipment.
That's Jeff Smith with utility company PG&E. Former President Trump says he has received a letter from special counsel Jack Smith that he says he's the target of a probe into alleged attempts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. CBS's Robert Costa reports.
Although it is unclear which specific charges Trump could face, his refusal to concede the 2020 election, false claims of election denial, and push for allies to fight to keep him in office, including on January 6, are well documented. Witnesses from Trump's inner circle have testified that Trump applied pressure to a sprawling group of stakeholders as he fought to stay in power, including his own vice president, state election officials, members of Congress, and leaders at the Justice Department.
An American soldier crosses the border from South Korea into North Korea, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin.
One of our service members who was on a tour willfully and without authorization cross the military demarcation line. We believe that he is in DPRK custody.
The soldier was facing disciplinary action and was in the process of being sent back to the U.S. when he slipped away. A jury has decided that Johnson & Johnson's must pay almost $19 million to a California man who said he developed cancer from exposure to its baby powder. The company is looking to settle thousands of similar cases over its talc-based products in U.S. bankruptcy court. Retail stores in San Francisco are taking new steps to prevent rampant shoplifting. KCBS's Matt Bigler.
Before customers can leave from the self-checkout area at this San Francisco Safeway, they have to scan the receipts. Only then will security gates slide open.
I think it's inconvenience, yes.
It went pretty well. I just put the thing on the receipt and went out.
Shopper Stanley Walton says he doesn't blame the grocery chain for trying something new to prevent people from stealing.
Do you think this will work?
I think it'll slow it down.
Meanwhile, some Walgreens stores here are now chaining and padlocking their freezers to stop shoplifters from swiping pizza and ice cream. Matt Bigler for CBS News, San Francisco.
This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Imagine.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For WCFW and the TAP 93.5 FM, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. Wisconsin Farm Technology Days began today in Baraboo. The three-day event runs through Thursday afternoon. The annual event, which is done in a different county each year, brings in tens of thousands of visitors. Governor Tony Evers was there this morning and talked about the need for public funding to help expand broadband internet access for all communities.
For broadband, we also have to have affordable broadband. That is a key. And in order to do that, frankly, the federal government, state government will need to significantly subsidize putting it in the ground and bring it to people's homes. And we just expect that.
This year's event is being held at the Badger Steam and Gas Engine Club grounds west of Baraboo and is open from 9 a.m. until 4 p.m. each day. There's an admission charge, but kids 12 and under are free, and so is parking. Farm Tech Days moves to Chippewa County next year. From the Civic Media News Desk in Western Wisconsin, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Wesley is a truck driver.
I drive a truck, and I love what I do.
A truck driver with IRS troubles.
They told me I owed them $43,000.
It got really bad.
Quite a few letters in the mail. They were talking about wage garnishment coming after my house, my car. Yeah, they don't play around. I seriously thought that I was going to lose everything.
One sleepless night, Wesley finally made a call to Optima Tax Relief at 2 a.m.
Kind of I figured I'd get a machine, but I didn't. I actually got to talk to an actual person in the middle of the night.
He found just what he was looking for.
Oh, they were great people. You need a team of people that know what they're doing. Optima Tax, they know what they're doing.
Optima Tax Relief came through with flying colors.
I saved an incredible amount of money. Happy don't even come close. I was absolutely overjoyed.
Take Wesley's advice.
If you're in any kind of trouble with the IRS, call Optima Tax Relief. Don't trust anybody else.
Call Optima for a free consultation. Call 800-343-6460. 800-343-6460. 800-343-6460.
Optima Tax Relief.
Some restrictions apply. For complete details, please visit OptimaTaxRelief.com.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Kreutz. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. It's What's on Tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
Don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Back in the studio after a couple of days in Chicago covering the Netroots Nation big powwow. A couple thousand progressives came together and talked about their issues. And again, I come back to what I always say, progressive policies, extraordinarily popular. Progressive ideas, extremely popular. Progressives, well, sometimes not so much. But the ideas, the policies, the way forward, enjoyed the time there. The hope is that out of that big powwow comes some activism to get people out to vote, so that we can do the things that need to get done, the things that Jelly Bucket Joe, Builder Biden's been out there doing. And look, the trip to Chicago and the trip back, always very interesting on the highways and byways of our crumbling infrastructure. And I've made this trip, you know, numerous times over the years. And every time I do, I talk about just how terrible the Indiana Turnpike is. And again, the sign of bad privatization, because if you remember a number of years back, they privatized it. And then I guess it was a Spanish company that fell through. They screwed it up and, you know, try and get it. They're trying, give them credit. They're trying to do some little this and little of that. And I got to wonder how much of Biden's, you know, infrastructure money is going in just picking up and fixing the screw-up of privatization. Again, neoliberalism and Reaganomics and all of the bad policy and the bad ideology that came out of the 80s and 90s, we're having to clean up. And look, and as I've said, you know, Biden is doing the work, and you got to give him credit. So as we're traveling back and forth, there were a lot of orange cones. A lot of construction going on, a lot of things that, well, need to get, and a lot of places that need to get work on. This is why, again, I go back to Builder Biden, you know, Jelly Bucket Joe doing the work, getting the funding out there. And again, we're in this moment where Republicans showing their true colors. And it, again, this isn't about, you know, the weird thing is, you know, politics used to be about, you know, little infighting, but you still had to go home. You still had to go back to your district and say, yeah, that pothole, yeah, it's still there. Yeah, that turnpike sucks. Yeah, it's still not done. And voters would hold you accountable for the things they could see,
for the things that weren't getting done. Because at least in the past, you'd go and you'd yell at your congressman, fix this pothole, and it would get filled. And you felt like, you know, we did something. Our guy is listening, or our gal is listening. Someone is listening. But I look again at the trek home, and not so much. And the reason I bring this up, couple of reasons, to be honest. You got Biden, who's been out there, you know, talking about building infrastructure and pointing it out. And in fact, you can go to the website, invest.gov, and there's a list of projects being done. You can follow along, all of that. But Republicans still in this moment, while taking credit for stuff that they didn't have anything to do with, they're still trying to defund the money that's going to go into the infrastructure that we desperately need. Look, I've spent a couple million miles on these roads. They've needed it for decades. They've needed serious attention for decades. And finally, you got a guy who's saying, you know, we're going to do it. We're finally going to be able to get something accomplished. We're finally going to get something done. And Republicans are doing everything they can do to booger it up. And it's just mind-blowing to me, because at least they can go back to their districts and say, hey, look what's gotten done. Now, granted, we didn't do anything for it, but hey, let's at least take credit for it. But here they are. And what's bothering also, again, to me in this, is the fact that Democrats aren't doing enough to really, you know, sound the horn of saying, hey, look what we've done. Now, I love this Joe Biden ad because, again, turning what the attack from someone like Marjorie Three Names is into something very positive, to me, kind of a good thing. So a little background. Marjorie Three Names was at the crazy conference over the weekend, the Turning Points USA conference in Florida. Where else? And, you know, given her spiel, you know, it's about socialism. And this is what the Biden folks decided they were going to do with her speech. And I got to tell you, I think it's absolutely brilliant that this is what they've done. Here's Marjorie Three Names giving her a little spiel.
Biden had the largest public investment in social infrastructure and environmental programs that is actually finishing what FDR started, that LBJ expanded on, and Joe Biden is attempting to complete. Programs to address education, medical care, urban problems, rural poverty, transportation, Medicare, Medicaid, labor unions. And he still is working on it.
Wow, that, I gotta tell you, that is phenomenal. You know, look, here's the thing. I thought Marjorie Three Names was crazy. I thought she was bad. Look, given credit where credit is due, props to Biden from Marjorie Three Names. Now, understand, this was a creative editing job, and even the Biden folks will tell you this, because the reality is, you know, they're socialists, was her line. You know, it's all bad. You know, and a whole bunch of things that she got wrong. You know, LBJ, things about Biden, actually said that they both identified as democratic socialists. Neither have ever done that. In fact, I don't even think you had democratic socialists during the LBJ era. She said that both Biden and LBJ were both Senate majority leaders. No. Biden was never the majority leader. But again, you know, facts don't matter. You know, accuracy in this world doesn't matter, because it got wild applause from the faithful at the Turning Points USA conference of people who are saying, you know, we gotta go after those big government programs. And what I want Republicans running on what her spiel was. I want the GOP, because remember, Speaker McCarthy came out and said that, you know, Marjorie Three Names is the best and the brightest and, you know, the most conservative of the GOP. She's like a super god in Speaker McCarthy's worldview. I want the Republicans to finally run on Marjorie Three Names spiel here. Run against Medicare, run against Medicaid, run against feeding hungry children, run against workers getting a fair wage. Do that out loud. Now, this is what they've been doing all along. This is who the Republican Party has always been. She is just dumb enough to say the quiet parts really loudly. Give her credit. You know, she's not afraid to burn down the Republican Party. And what's interesting is you got, you know, people like Senator Lisa Murkowski, who's saying, you know, I get, you know, Republicans coming to me all the time. I can't take much more of this. No, your party's gone. The old school GOP that thought that they were somewhat, you know, sane, that's gone. It's over. It's done. Marjorie Three Names is now the titular head of the Republican Party, and she's going to run against what built this country. She is going to run against ensuring that seniors don't die in poverty. She's going to run against public education. She's going to run against health care for people. She's going to run on the hyper-capitalist, hooray for me, greed is good, screw you platform. That's what her spiel was. And what's interesting, the people in that room at the Turning Points USA powwow, they cheered. Yay! We're going to go get those people. And what's interesting to me, it's always been interesting to me, those people are generally all of us. And, you know, so she went into this whole powwow about, you know, LBJ had the Great Society and Biden has the Build Back Better. And he's still working on it. The largest public investment and social infrastructure environmental program that is actually finishing what FDR started and that LBJ expanded on and Biden has attempted to complete. And I listen to that and I ask anyone, you against that? Is that a bad idea? Now, she says, socialism. You know, we've got a $32 trillion debt, homelessness, inflation. We're losing the dollar. And my mind goes, this is why you don't allow dumb people into Congress. This is why we should not allow the dumbest person in the class to lead. Because understand, the massive deficits we have a lot to do with Republican, conservative, neoliberal policies. Our trade deficits, the massive, massive tax giveaways we've given away over decades. We've created a billionaire class by saddling the nation with debt. And yet there seems to be a disconnect. There seems to be a disconnect somewhere between Marjorie Trainwreck's ears and the people who are sitting in that room applauding her saying, we're going to stop socialism, without thinking about the public investments that are being made, that were made during the FDR years, the public investments that were made during the LBJ years. Those paid dividends for decades into the future. The investments made under the good socialist president Dwight David Eisenhower, those investments paid dividends for decades. We're still reaping the benefits of those investments. And yet, you got Marjorie Three Names. You got Marjorie who's just, you know, she can't help herself. She's got to go on and I got to play it again. You know I do. You know I've got to have Marjorie in her way. Just lay it out for us. Here's Marjorie Three Names again.
Joe Biden had the largest public investment in social infrastructure and environmental programs that is actually finishing what FDR started, that LBJ expanded on, and Joe Biden is attempting to complete programs to address education, medical care, urban problems, rural poverty, transportation, Medicare, Medicaid, labor unions. And he still is working on it.
And he is still working on it. And hopefully come 2024, Well, we're going to keep working on it by not allowing people like Marjorie Three Names anywhere near the halls of power. Got to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I come back to this, the fact that Marjorie Three Names and Republicans, please run on that platform. We're going to end Social Security because you remember what during the State of the Union, we're not going after Medicare. We wouldn't do such a thing. Only we keep saying and telling you and writing and all of that we're going to. We would never. Of course not. And there's the weird thing. Stupid people still buy into it. That, you know, no, they wouldn't do it. They said they wouldn't. They're going to. They've always wanted. That's always been on the wet dream list. Let's go to the phone. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are you?
Totally insane, thanks. How about you?
I am good. It's good to be back in the studio. What's on your mind?
What I wanted to say was a couple of things. First of all, Marjorie Three Names is a complete and utter idiot, but then most Republicans are. Number two, did you catch the news and see the... I'm guessing she must be a MTG wannabe, for the Americans for Prosperity that was on the news, running her mouth about being against the infrastructure in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. I caught part of it.
Oh, my God.
What's interesting to me is that they can say this stuff with a straight face and that anyone will take them seriously ever again.
Oh, I know. And she's going on, this woman, you know, the woman when she was going on and on about all this inflation and it's Biden and we want to go back to flood everything with all this energy and lower gas prices and food prices. And I thought, you're just a freaking idiot that doesn't know how anything works, do you, honey? Oh, yay, yay. But, and last, I was told yesterday by the local evangelical Trumpkins that, did you know, by the way, Rick, because I've not heard any of this, but apparently all the churches are having to lock their doors because all the Christians are getting letters that they're going to be shot up in church. And there's been several churches have been attacked and everybody shot. I must have missed the news.
Wow, as if there wasn't a reason to not go to church before, I maybe spread that rumor. Nobody will go. I guess that's the game? Because I'm trying to figure out the end game in this.
Well, they told me, see how the Christians are persecuted.
Oh, okay.
We're just persecuted.
Yeah, the victim card. Got it.
Yeah, it was the victim card. So I just was like, well, I missed the news. I haven't seen it or heard any of it. But that's my report from my little hamlet. So you have a good evening.
Thanks so much. It's important to have that. No, I mean, look, I've heard the victim card stuff a lot. And the Q folks are masters at it. You know, it's hysterical. This Sound of Freedom movie that I haven't seen yet, that I almost have to see, but I don't want to pay for, because I don't want to give these people more money. Crying victimhood, while it is the top grossing movie, everyone's trying to shut us out, but it's making more money than anything else. Everyone's trying to make us, you know, not see the movie, yet it's making more money. And taking little things like, you know, the lights didn't work or the film went out at one point. People who have gone to movies, and this is the thing, if you've ever, maybe this is the problem. Maybe these are people who were never out of the house before and have never gone places, and maybe they don't know how real life works. Maybe this is what it is. Because I've been to movies where in the middle it stops. I've been to movies where the lights got stuck or were off or on, or you name it. The heat didn't work. The air conditioning didn't work. There was a foul odor from the seat behind us. All of these things happen when you're talking about public space. But when you're talking about the Christian folk, it becomes a conspiracy. And this is my problem with the extreme religious, what I say, the people who are pushing Christian Sharia law. Look, I've utmost respect for religious people, the sane, the rational ones, the ones who are off on the deep end, who around every corner see some kind of conspiracy and victimhood and start creating their own narratives. This is where I have a problem. And this is where we all should have a problem. And I didn't want to get into this, but Alice brought it up. You know, over the period while we were in Chicago, you saw some of this stuff going on where the zealots were out and pushing this narrative that's really kind of frightening. And this movie's part of that. This idea of you're going to be a Christian warrior and you're going to take on the establishment individually and you're going to go and single-handedly right the wrongs in the name of God. And you can do this kind of superhero, this kind of, you know, zealot religious superhero. Because they've never really had one of those in the past. You know, they never had the big R on their shirt, you know, religion. And now they're creating that. And, you know, the conversation I had over the weekend was, this is how you end up with terrorists doing extreme things like shooting places up. This is how you're going to get, you know, the zealotry that we look at in some of the Muslim communities and go, you know, that's them. I am not painting all of Christianity with the same brush. I'm targeting it at the crazy people. The people who are wearing the Christian warrior T-shirts. The people who want to bring us a hyper-religious set of laws and codes that everyone, regardless of whether you believe or not, have to abide by. This is the scary part of what's happening in this country. And until we push back, the silent majority, the people who have always been tolerant of the extremists, one day we're going to wake up and go, there's no way back. When the Marjorie Three names of the world, when they take over, we've got real problems. And I don't want to be this kind of doomsday, dark cloud kind of commentator, but we see what happens when desperation and zealotry meet. We see what happens when poverty and struggle meet with this kind of fantasful thinking of, you know, we're the chosen and our God is bigger than yours and you shall be conquered. And the rhetoric that comes out of all of this, that's what's frightening to me. It's this indoctrination. So the people who are the ones who are out there screaming about, they're indoctrinating our kids, they're the ones doing it. You know, this isn't difficult to figure out. This has worked time and time again. So when I see a movie like I saw the trailer for it, you know, and I got enough of what I think I got enough from that. When you see this Sound of Freedom plot, where there is a true crime, there is truly something wrong that needs to be addressed, but this idea that we're going to have this, you know, these warriors and we're going to do it, and this is dangerous stuff. And as I've said, this is how the, you know, the you name the terrorist group overseas, this is how they recruit. So my fear is it happens right here. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Lots going on today. Just a little bit in the news. We'll get to that when we come back. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com, if you got something on your mind. Back after this.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1969. That was the day hospital workers in Charleston, South Carolina, won union recognition. The 113-day strike reflected all the broader social issues of the day. Led primarily by black women, the strike at the medical college, Charleston County, and several other hospitals intersected civil rights and racial and gender discrimination on the job. Jewel Charmaine Debnam notes that women like Local 1199B President Mary Moultrie, Naomi Watts, and others were essential to the strike not only as daily participants on the picket line, but also as leaders of the local movement establishment. For months, strikers marched, walked picket lines, clashed with police, and held vigils demanding their right to organize. They defied injunctions and endured hundreds of arrests, nightly curfews, and confrontations with state National Guard. Governor McNair and the hospital boards had initially refused to concede to the workers' demands for union recognition. They claimed workers paid with public funds could not engage in collective bargaining. But the women were steadfast. They pointed to the wage disparities between black and white workers and between male and female workers. They also protested the blatant disrespect and discrimination meted out daily by management. Local longshoremen stood in solidarity with the strikers and threatened a walkout in support if their demands were not met. Coretta Scott King and many other civil rights leaders also played a supportive role. Finally, the union won reinstatement of fired workers, which had touched off the strike. They also won a solid grievance procedure, a minimum wage, and access to a credit union. Victory would be short-lived, however, when the state almost immediately refused to hold up its end of the agreement.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
All those firecrackers on July 4th got me thinking about the headline revolutionaries who signed the 1776 Declaration, fought the Brits for independence, hammered out the Constitution, and installed our Bill of Rights. Old Ben, Monticello Tom, General George, Alex, pamphleteer Tommy Paine, Jimmy and Dolly, Tea Party Sam, and others got America's democratic experiment started. And they're rightly saluted today from schoolrooms to political gatherings of both major parties as true patriots. Reflecting on that generation's remarkable impact reveals the historic potential of our people's democratic spirit. But it also raises the unavoidable contrast with our present crop of leading political characters. This is worth noting now because the 4th has become the opening bell for America's quadrennial presidential run. Yes, ready or not, the first debates are only a month away, and Iowa's Republican caucuses are set for January 15. So here's my question. Given the current state of our two major parties, would any of the patriots of 76 have a snowball's chance in hell of being nominated for president of the country they founded? Consider George Washington. The GOP's MAGA crowd would boo him off the stage. Trump would mock the general as Toothless George. And the party of QAnon, anti-woke nonsense, and Marjorie Taylor Greene would place him behind uber-rich ego-trippers like Vivek Ramaswamy and Doug Burgum. Democrats, while today's grassroots Dems would rally enthusiastically to the little-d democratic principles and firebrand activism of Thomas Paine or Samuel Adams, the party's pusillanimous corporate-hugging establishment would bury both in a muddy deluge of money and lies. This is Jim Hightower saying, this political reality shouldn't depress us, but provoke us into demanding and doing better. Maybe greatness is now beyond us, but shouldn't we strive for more than mediocrity and outright goofiness?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we got up today to the truth over on Truth Social. And I'm sure a lot of people retruth the truth of the truth teller. You know, what a joke. But anyway, Donald Trump is truthed out that he's the target. Got a special letter from Jack Smith saying he's the target of a grand jury investigation. Because, hey, he kind of tried to overthrow the 2020 election, did a couple of things, led to that little, powwow thing where they, defecated on the floor of our Capitol and, did all that stuff. You know, the perfectly fine day of walking between the ropes. You've heard about it. Now, what's interesting to me is you look at all of the indictments that are now rolling in. Republicans still defending poor Donald. I wonder when that flip happens. But here to share some thoughts on their report, and they've got a great report out today. And I got to wonder if there was some rolling of the dice, some crystal ball kind of thinking, because the folks over at CRU, they've got a new report saying that, Donald Trump should be disqualified because of the 14th Amendment. And that's why I've asked Donald K. Sherman to come talk with us. He's the executive vice president and chief counsel for the folks at CRU, the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. You can check out their website, citizensforethics.org. Donald, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start right with this. Why do you think he shouldn't be allowed to run? What precludes him in this moment?
Well, yeah, I mean, everyone knows many of the qualifications and disqualifications for serving as president. You have to be a natural born citizen. You have to be 35 years old. You can't have been elected twice to serve as president or serve two terms. Lesser known is codified in Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. It's called the Disqualification Clause. And it says if you took an oath to defend the Constitution and engaged in an insurrection against it, you are banned or disqualified from serving as a state or federal officer. Sadly, it seems tailor-made for the situation that Donald Trump has once again put us in. He is someone who everybody saw take an oath to defend the Constitution on January 20th, 2017, as an officer of the United States. It is commonly understood, including by Donald Trump's own impeachment lawyers, that January 6th was an insurrection. And it is also commonly understood, including by, bipartisan votes in the House and the Senate, the January 6th committee, federal judges appointed by Republicans and Democrats, that Donald Trump was the central cause of the insurrection. This is, not rocket science. It is in many ways, 2 + 2 = 4. Donald Trump is disqualified from serving as a federal officer, as a governor, as president of the United States under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment.
Shouldn't that only be, though, if he's been convicted? I mean, there's a lot of where's the conviction, my right-wing friends would ask. Where's the presumed innocent until proven guilty? Where's that in this report?
Well, I think your right-wing friends might say that there wasn't an insurrection.
They truly believe it was a peaceful day. It was a family day, I was told. It was like a kind of a picnic-y atmosphere.
But I will tell you, in the aftermath of the Civil War, the Reconstruction Congress wrestled with this issue and concluded that no criminal conviction was needed to be disqualified from office. Again, it's not a criminal punishment. It just says that you are not eligible to serve, just in the same way that somebody that's 25 years old is ineligible to serve. Funnily enough, just in the same way that the former president suggested that President Obama was not eligible to serve, lying and claiming that he wasn't a natural born citizen in the United States, it's not a penalty, it's not a punishment, it is a qualification for office or a disqualification in this instance. So you challenge his eligibility on the ballot, much like lots of people do, much like happens in every election in every state in this country every year that there is an election, and you go to court and you prove by a preponderance of evidence that Donald Trump engaged in insurrection, and under Section 3, that's the end of the story. You don't need a criminal conviction. And we proved that last year when we removed someone from office, Coy Griffin, who founded Cowboys for Trump in New Mexico, and we sued and got him removed from office in a civil case based on his participation in the insurrection. So there is not just precedent that's 150 years old, but there's precedent that is a few months old, confirming that you don't need to be criminally convicted of a crime of insurrection or any crime related to insurrection in order to be removed or disqualified from office.
Yeah, I'm in a weird spot here, Donald, because I'll be honest with you. I don't ever want him anywhere near the White House. I don't think he should be even allowed to take the tour, let alone sit in the Oval Office. But there's still this part of me that goes, he has to be beaten at the ballot box for the good of the country. And for the, you know, the good of the future of this country, he has to be beaten soundly at the ballot box where we as Americans say, you know what, this isn't who we are. But I get the point, and I get what you're saying. I'm still in this place where I think he's got to be beaten at the box.
So, I mean, I would point out that he was beaten at the box by some 7 million plus votes. And then he staged an insurrection to overthrow a free and fair election. So the idea that, like he needs to be beaten at the ballot box and that, you know, like that happened already. And he was repudiated by the voters. The reason we're in this place and the reason he's disqualified is because he refused to accept the results of a free and fair election, spread lies, recruited people to come to the Capitol and be violent and fight like hell at the Capitol. And we almost lost members of Congress. We almost lost our vice president because of it. The Constitution says you don't get a second chance to do that, right? I think I'm less worried about the next election or the next two elections. I'm more worried about 50, 100 years from now. God forbid we are in this place again. Thankfully, when we looked at the case law, there were examples, numerous examples, of people disqualified after the Civil War for engaging in insurrection against this government. I want to make sure that if we are in this place, if our democracy is in this place, long after we are gone, that there is a historical record and legal precedence that Donald Trump was held accountable in this way, and that, you know, you can't engage in insurrection and then just, you know, submit and then run for president again.
Yeah. No, I'm right there with you, Donald. But, you know, I over the weekend, I don't know if you saw the quote from Vivek Ramaswamy, who said, that, you know, basically January 6th, was a friendly preview of what's to come. So I hear what you're saying, but my fear, I keep coming back to this place where the Republicans, and I know you're a nonpartisan group, you're a straight down the middle of the group, line group, but I look at the defense of Donald Trump from the Republicans, very few voices coming out and speaking out against them. The justification that somehow we're weaponizing every agency to go after him. And now Ramaswamy saying, hey, that January 6th thing, that was just a friendly preview. Get ready for the main event. I'm in a weird kind of fear pattern. And my concern then comes if we disqualify him, boom, everything explodes. Any thoughts on that?
Well, again, I look at this is someone who questioned the results of an election that he won, right? And then spread lies and misinformation and incited an insurrection in an election that he lost. The idea that you know, we just narrowly missed again, yeah, members of Congress being attacked and killed on the floor. I mean, you heard those testimonials. You saw video of members cowering in fear, Capitol Police officers being crushed by Donald Trump's mob, members of Congress calling their family and telling them goodbye, the Vice President of the United States of his own party, of his own choosing, being ferried away to a secret location to protect him from Donald Trump's mob. We had a razor thin miss here of losing members of our government and losing our entire government. And the idea that we should just shrug our shoulders and hope that this election is the one that Donald Trump actually accepts just doesn't, it passes credulity, right? The idea that we would not use every legal tool in our toolkit to hold him accountable and ensure that this doesn't happen again, not just in 2024, again, but, you know, 50, 100 years from now. Like, this is where we have to draw the line, if nowhere else.
No. I mean, the crack pottery that came out of 2020, I mean, the idea that, Eastman came up with, and all of the thoughts that were being kicked around the room as possibilities, the possibility of the vice president not certifying an election, and look, the savior of the country being in the hands of a guy who couldn't spell potato is quite frightening to me. I got to be honest, Donald. I never thought we'd be here. I
don't think anyone thought we would be here. And again, we have to remind ourselves, Donald Trump has forced us into this position, right? He forced Mike Pence to stand in the breach, to, be the person to finally say no, that I won't overturn this election. He forced Capitol Police officers, the law enforcement who were under attack, to hold the line. And he's forcing us, by choosing to run again, despite obviously being disqualified, to draw a line in the sand and say, no, this tool was built for this moment. And if we don't use it here against the former president, then it really can't be used again going forward. And this tool that Congress and the states thought was so important that they ratified, that they amended the Constitution to include, will essentially become inert because we are worried about Donald Trump doing the things that we already know that he's capable of doing.
No, you're right. You're right on. You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Donald K. Sherman. He's the Executive Vice President and Chief Counsel with CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. You can check out their website, citizensforethics.org. We'll get links out on social media. So you've got this idea, you've got this this report out. What are the chances of someone moving on this, and what can we do to help move this forward? Because look, I know a lot of people who don't want him to run for re-election because of the fear that, who knows, he might get elected and then pardon himself for all of the crimes that he's committed, even though we're not sure he can do that either. But that, I'm sure, will not stop him. What are the chances?
Well, look, we know two things happen in the two times that Donald Trump ran for election. The first is he won, and he shredded all our ethical norms and rules and the Constitution. And the second, he lost and incited an insurrection against our government to overturn a free and fair election in violation of the Constitution. Those are the two likeliest outcomes here. You asked, what's the next step? Well, we're going to take legal action as soon as it is legally and strategically viable for us to do so in order to enforce Section 3 against him. Again, we've brought litigation like this before in New Mexico and won the first case in over 150 years using Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, the first case where a court decided as a matter of law that January 6th was an insurrection under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, and we are preparing to do that again. This is a moment where people of goodwill have to stand up and use all of the legal tools available to say no, and to ensure that the Constitution is enforced in the way that the drafters of Section 3 intended.
Well, it's going to be interesting, and I'm behind you. I hope the best. I want this to happen. I don't have a lot of faith in our Supreme Court. Let me ask you that. I mean, do you have much faith in our Supreme Court to make the right call on something like this? Because ultimately, this is where it goes, no?
So I think a couple of things about the Supreme Court. One, they have scrupulously avoided January 6th cases, which suggests to me that they have, except for Thompson v. Trump, where they rejected the appeal and allowed the January 6th committee to get key documents. So I think there's some hope there. But also, it's important to remember the Supreme Court itself was under threat in the days leading up to January 6th. And certainly it's likely that they were under threat on January 6th. But also, these justices have life tenure. And so, you know, I think they're insulated from some of the influences that we've seen in other situations. I think they are insulated from with respect to the former president. Yeah. And it seems clear that their tack on January 6th has not followed the same ideological sort of disputes that other issues have. So we are confident that we can bring a case that will win. And we like our chances at the Supreme Court because we believe strongly that the Constitution's on our side.
Good stuff. Donald, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Best of luck. I hope you come back and talk to us again as this continues down the road.
Happily. Thank you so much for calling attention to this.
Appreciate the time. Again, Donald K. Sherman, he's the executive director, executive vice president and chief counsel over at CREW, Citizens for Ethics in Washington, Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Citizensforethics.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. Gonna take a quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
This day in labor history, the year was 1919. That Friday, thousands of workers in the Chicago stockyards walked off the job. A serious union organizing drive had been underway in the yards since June. One of the organizers of the butchers was John Kikulski. John declared it would be a campaign that included workers who were Polish, Irish, Lithuanian, and in fact, every race, color, creed, and nationality. This was an important pledge because earlier unionization efforts had failed to unite the workforce and had often excluded black workers. Yet the years of racial barriers to unionize proved hard to break down. While 90% of the white workers joined the union, black recruitment lagged behind. Tensions between the newly arriving Eastern European workers and more established white workers also simmered. Despite these setbacks, the stockyard owners were alarmed by the success of the union drive. They sent in 300 mounted policemen to disrupt union meetings and monitor the workers' movements. Angered at the police presence, 10,000 workers walked off the job. They returned to work on Monday, but began organizing for a strike. On July 26th, the workers issued their demands to management for better pay and safer working conditions. The next day would be one of the most infamous days in Chicago history. A group of white Chicagoans stoned and killed a black boy who was swimming and had accidentally drifted into a whites-only part of Lake Michigan. For the next week, a race riot engulfed the neighborhoods surrounding the stockyards. 1,000 black families lost their homes to arson. 23 black and 15 white residents were killed. Any hope of racial unity had been crushed, and as a result, the strike failed. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So Lauren in Santa Fe sent me an email, a lengthy email. Wow. Lots of talking points in there, but the gist of it being that everyone's out to get Trump, all the agencies have been weaponized. It's the same talking points you get. And my response to this is always, look, if it were one thing and you go, they were going after him for one thing, you go, okay, yeah, you could make the argument that someone was out to get him. You know, it's kind of like I got a friend who's been married 5 times. And the first time you go, yeah, okay, it was the wife's, it was her fault. Second time, you go, okay, maybe it was her fault. Third time, yeah. Fourth time, it's you, buddy. Fifth time, definitely you. Nobody, there's no conspiracy. It's not all women are out to get you. No, it's you're an idiot. You're responsible in this. And this is how I see this whole Trump thing. Not everyone's out to get him. He's just done a lot of really dumb, bad stuff. Let's go to the phones. I got Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how you doing today?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Great. Thank you for taking my call. So I wanted to raise a point about this whole question of third parties. And given the impact of someone like Jill Stein in 2016, of Ralph Bader in 2000, Ross Perot in 1992. I mean, these third-party challenges to mainstream politics, I mean, usually they're just a fly, a pimple on the back of our body politic. But in these cases, these are people who literally could have given the election to the other side. I mean, we're talking about predictions going forward as far as 2024 that possibly 100, 150,000 voters will decide those races in key states and the election.
Yep.
And, you know, somebody running on a third-party ticket, be it a Cornell West or what have you, you know, it can just pull away a few tens of thousands of votes, enough to give it to Donald Trump if he is the nominee. And, you know, so I am tired of people who are making this argument that, oh, you know what, the Democratic and Republican parties are pretty much the two sides of the same coin. Okay, no, Donald Trump has taught us that that's not the case.
Nope.
If you think this country and the Supreme Court would look the same way had Hillary Clinton been the president, then you're delusional. So, you know, it's time that we just stand up to people and say, you know, this is not a political science seminar. This is the real world. You're not going to get everything that you want. But if you allow Donald Trump to win, you're not going to get anything that you want. And we're going to go backwards.
No, you're spot on. And look, you know, I'm not opposed to third party runs in places where, you know, like Illinois, for instance, where you're a blue state. I like the fact that people are getting out, pushing ideas and issues and pushing the main parties in directions. But when you're talking about, you know, Wisconsin, you're talking about Michigan, my state of Pennsylvania, where you're right, you know, a couple of thousand votes one way or another swings an election, and we end up with a George W. Bush, and we end up with all of the things that came out of that. We end up with a Donald Trump. I'm right there with you, Steve.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call. No, because here's the thing. And look, you know, you've got the no labels people right now who are saying, no, we're gonna have a Democrat and a Republican run on the same ticket, knowing that they're gonna pull votes away from Democrats. Because those moderate Republicans who moved over to vote for Biden and against Trump, that was the difference in the last election. I know a lot of people have no, young people came out. Oh, those came out. No, it was I always say it's the 5% of the least active, least engaged, least informed voters who decide every election, because they're the ones who flip back and forth. A lot of people are there in their camps. They have their ideology, and it's those undecideds who, well, I'll flip a coin, or he looks better, or whatever the reason for voting is. And this is where these third way, no labels. Yeah, this is where these groups thrive, because they know they can swing with just a small amount of the electorate. They can swing elections. And I know a lot of my Ralph Nader friends, and I like Ralph Nader. I met him once. You know, good guy, smart guy. But Florida was what Florida was. This is a different country if Al Gore is president. This is a much different country if George W. Bush is not the guy, and all the things that happened during his 8 years. This is a much different country if you don't have the, you know, the Bernie bro folks and the people who are like, we're going to burn it all down because I hate Hillary. Look, I was not a Hillary fan, but I knew how bad Donald Trump was going to be. This would be a very different country, very different policies. And this is where I keep coming back to the idea that the working class has to come together and elect good, smart people. And I think Joe Biden in this moment is the best guy. The fact that we are rebuilding our infrastructure, we are reshoring manufacturing, we've got a president who's saying, hey, we should be reunionizing this country. We should be fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities. Now, look, I think the Republican establishment, the backroom people, I think they know Trump is toast. And they're doing everything that they can to, well, you know, for instance, one of Trump's ex-cabinet members, Wilbur Ross, former Commerce Secretary, he's pulling together top donors to get Glenn Youngkin in. Youngkin's the scary guy because they think him in his sweater vest are gonna attract a lot of people. There's a $40 million ad buy happening for Tim Scott from a super PAC because, hey, we're going to put him out there because the moneyed interests on the right don't think Trump is their guy. The problem is they lost control of the people they were outraging. They lost control of the flock. Now, as I understand, only six people have on the Republican side have qualified for the RNC's upcoming debates. Trump, DeSantis, Nikki Haley, Vivek Ramaswamy, Chris Christie, and Tim Scott. Should be interesting. I'm under the impression Trump is not going to show up. And I got to tell you, if I were him, I wouldn't either. So it'll be interesting to watch them attack each other and go from there. But no, seriously, this is the third way, you know, no labels, all those people, even the Green Party. Look, I love Cornel West. I think it's a huge mistake because you will pull votes away in key areas. And that, I don't want to wake up the morning after election day going, oh, happened again. we got somebody crazy.